Cook, what an appropriate song. Elvis Costello, Every Day I Write the Book. Today is January. Well, today's date is January. January 6, 2011. We're here in beautiful Washington, D.C., the United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. I am your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones, and the doctor is for PhD, PhD in history from William and Mary. All right. We left off yesterday, and we were talking about Obama's czars. And as Glenn Beck said once, how many Marxist, socialist, communist, anti-capitalist, and pro-forced sterilization people do you have to have around you on a daily basis? Well, Mr. Obama's administration is loaded with them. They're all around him. Is this the change that he promised? I would say that it is. This is what he planned all along. The only question is, are the American people going to let him get away with it? Are we going to let him fundamentally change America? Are we going to let him take away the republic that was given to us? Obama said during the election that you will know how he will govern by the type of people that he surrounds himself with. So what are we to make of the fact that he surrounds himself with anti-capitalist radicals? Should this not indicate to us that he is also an anti-capitalist? Also, like Glenn Beck said, I would like to know if at any time since his infatuation with socialism as a young man, if he ever disavowed it. Has he ever said that he was mistaken as a youth and that he is a true blue capitalist now? I believe that America is truly at a turning point. I believe that we are about to see things in the near future that we never thought we would see. I believe the America that we've had over the last 20 years is not going to be the America that we will have in 5 years. But the thing is that I don't know which way it's going to go. Although I do know one thing for sure, and that is if the American people do not take serious action, well, we're going to be in a lot of trouble. So let's give that some thought, because time is running out. Time is truly running out on the American people and our republic. If we don't do something, we've got to get a handle on this as soon as possible. And we've got to call our congressmen and force an accounting, because I believe that Obama means this country no good in terms of how we have lived our lives. And, you know, America isn't perfect. It's not a perfect place. It's not a perfect republic. But to fundamentally transform our nation into something that will be at one point unrecognizable is not what I believe that most of us, most Americans, voted for. So, with that, we're going to move on with our czars. we're going to get into our next czar. Oh, wait a minute. We did not finish the czar countdown from yesterday. We did not finish counting down all of the czars. And we really need to get to that so we can fully have a complete list of who's who and what. All right, when last we left off, we were at the technology czar, Anish Chopra. Technology czar, no technology training. Worked for the advisory board company, a healthcare think tank for hospitals. Anti-doctor advocate. Supports Obama healthcare rationing and salaried doctors working exclusively for the government. I'm sorry, I misstated that. Supports rationing and supports salaried doctors working exclusively for the government healthcare plan. Now we've got it right. Now, next on the list, Adolfo Carrion Jr., Urban Affairs Czar, Puerto Rican, anti-American activist and leftist group member in Latin America, millionaire slumlord of the Bronx, oh yeah, New York, and he owns many lavish homes and condos, which he got from sweetheart deals with labor unions. Wants higher taxes to pay for minority housing and health care. It's not too bad. Bad enough. Ashton Carter, weapons czar. Oh, that sounds scary. Leftist wants all private weapons in U.S. destroyed. Supports U.N. ban on firearms ownership in America. Wow. Let's do that one once more. Ashton Carter, he is Obama's weapons czar. He wants all private weapons in U.S. destroyed. Supports U.N. ban on firearms ownership in America. This is getting worse, isn't it? I mean, are you kidding? This is getting worse by the minute. I can't believe what I just read. This guy is working for the United States government. This man works and answers to one man and one man alone. Besides the Congress, I mean, because they're paying the bills for this guy. He answers only to the President of the United States. Is that scary enough for you? Okay. Last but certainly not least, Gary Seymour. WMD policy czar, former U.S. communist, wants U.S. to destroy all WMDs unilaterally as a show of good faith. He has no other policy. Wait, there's more. And I am remiss in forgetting Kevin Jennings, Safe School Czar. Are you kidding me? As a teacher, when a 15-year-old said he was having sex with an old man, instead of turning in the man, the law for a teacher, he asked how it was going and suggested they use condoms, held a conference with the maximum age of 18, to teach homosexual issues like fisting, wrote the intro to the book, Queering Elementary Education, end quote. So well, let's quote that. Quote, Queering Elementary Education, end quote. That's the book. Has repeatedly praised and claims to be inspired by Harry Hay, an early supporter of NAMBLA, North American Man-Boy Love Association. Yeah. He is President Barack Obama's safe school czar. Now, did you ever think? I don't know if you were here for all of the czars that I pointed out, or that I listed, and then a lot of their backgrounds. But these are people that were handpicked by the President of the United States. I can't stress that enough. So one wonders, what in the hell is going on here? Is this what he means by fundamental transformation of our government? So, before we get to our next czar, we have some news that came in earlier today. And it's important that I share this news with you because it's pretty, you know, it's late breaking news. It's not, you know, it's pretty fresh. So I think we should get to it. A group of House Republicans introduced a bill on Wednesday to rein in the various czars in the Obama administration. Representative Steve Scalise, Republican, Louisiana, and 28 other House Republicans introduced legislation to do away with the informal paid advisors President Obama has employed over the past 2 years. Now, the legislation, which was introduced in the last Congress but was not allowed to advance under Democratic control, would do away with the 39 czars Obama has employed during his administration. 39. The bill defines a czar as a head of any task force, council, policy office within the executive office of the president, or similar office established by or at the direction of the president, who is appointed to a position that would otherwise require Senate confirmation. Republicans had complained about the president's use of czars to help advance his agenda in Congress. In particular, the GOP had harped about the personal history of Van Jones. The president's czar for green jobs, get over yourself, dude. Over the past comments Jones had made about Fox News when they came to light, Jones eventually resigned. Another prominent czar over the past year was Carol Browner, who we'll talk about shortly. The president's energy and environmental advisor, she helped head up efforts in response to the Gulf of Mexico oil spill and the ultimately unsuccessful effort for an energy and climate bill from Congress. Republicans introduced several bills to eliminate czars in the last Congress, but as I stated, similar legislation would conceivably advance in the House now that the GOP controls the chamber. We haven't gotten an indication of an exact timeline for committee action, considering that bill was just filed yesterday, said Scalise. Scalise's spokesman, Stephanie Bell. We hope to have this discussion in the near future as the congressman works to pursue all the bills he has introduced in the 112th Congress. So it looks like there's going to be some sort of action taken concerning these 39 czars. And one wonders how that might play itself out. It would certainly be interesting to see how that all works. But now let's get to our czar of the day, as it were. This is an interesting one. I gotta tell you right now, this is fantastic. Oh man, where do we start with this woman? I mean, are you kidding? Until last week, Carol Browner, President-elect Barack Obama's pick as global warming czar. Oh man, it's just too much. I can't do it. Well, we're gonna do it. Hold on a minute. I just gotta collect my thoughts here for a minute. This is too much. She is horrible. You gotta wonder what's this guy thinking. Okay. All right, we're gonna get her going in just a minute. I just need to collect one of my notes here to give me more information on how this woman is, what her plan is here. All right. Until last week, Carolyn Browner, President-elect Barack Obama's pick for global warming czar, was listed in the New York Times as one of 14 leaders of a socialist group's commission for sustainable world society, which calls for global governing and says rich countries must shrink their economies to address climate change. She's part of a group called Socialist International, or was rather, an umbrella group for many of the world's social democratic political parties. She is a committed socialist and believes in open borders and that there are no governments and no countries. Mr. Obama, who has said action on climate change would be a priority in his administration, tapped Mrs. Browner last month to fill a new position as White House Coordinator of Climate and Energy Policies. The appointment does not need Senate confirmation. Of course not. Now, her association with the Commission for a Sustainable World Society includes world leaders from a variety of political parties, including British Prime Minister Gordon Brown, who succeeded Tony Blair. Carol Browner was chosen to help the president coordinate energy and climate policy because she understands that our efforts to create jobs, achieve energy security, and combat climate change demand her special expertise. Interesting. That's a direct quote from the President of the United States. Oh, man. So, we have Carol Browner. We have the other 37 czars, all of which are committed socialists. Wow. I tell you what. We've been talking about czars for the past week, all week, and it's been czar, czar, and nothing but czar. And it has occurred to me that people like Glenn Beck and myself and so many others who believe that the Obama administration has a plan for the United States that's completely, utterly radical and completely different from what we have come to know as America. So we have Carol Browner. And now you know a little bit more about her. Let's go to the next czar. Ron Blum was named the manufacturing czar for the United States by President Barack Obama in 2009. 2 days after communist green job czar Van Jones resigned under pressure. Communists, socialists, radicals, all these folks work for President Obama, and he said that during the campaign that we will know how he will govern because by the people he surrounds himself with on a daily basis. Very telling. To understand Ron Blum's assigned role, it helps to know the environment he comes from. Now, the Obama administration has emphasized Blum's investment banking and business background, but Blum has spent far longer in the labor and socialist movements, what a surprise, than he has on Wall Street. There's even some evidence that Blum specifically went into banking in order to better serve organized labor. Like Obama himself, Blum has moved in circles close to Democratic Socialist America, DSA, an organization far more socialist than democratic. To illustrate the DSA's radicalism, I cite their journal, Democratic Left, for the spring of 2007. The article by Detroit DSA chair and National Political Committee member David Green supports the Employee Free Choice Act, or CARCHECK. And here's what it says. What distinguishes socialism from other progressives is the theory of surplus value. According to Marx, the secret of the surplus value is that workers are a source of more value than they receive in wages. The capitalist is able to capture surplus value through his ownership of the means of production. His right to purchase labor as a commodity, his control over the production process, and his ownership of the final product. Surplus value is the measure of capital exploration of labor. Our goal as socialists is to abolish private ownership of the means of production. Our immediate task is to limit the capitalist class's prerogatives in the workplace. In the short run, we must at least minimize the degree of exploitation of workers by capitalists. We can accomplish this by promoting full employment policies, passing local living wage laws, but most of all by increasing the union movement's power. The Employee Free Choice Act, EFCA, provides an excellent organization tool through which we can pursue our socialist strategy while simultaneously engaging in the broader electorate on an issue of economic populism. Green explains how the DSA could play a role in getting the act passed through the Senate after the 2008 elections. The fact that we face an uphill battle in the Senate does not deter from the value of DSA doing organized work around the EFCA. I'm getting so tired of these damn acronyms or initials. At minimum, we can force conservative senators to place themselves on record as opposed to EFCA or CARCHECK. This would then make these incumbents even more vulnerable in the 2008 elections. As we replace only a few of these anti-labor senators in 2008, we should be able to pass EFCA in the next Congress. Well, we know that's not going to happen. Green, appointed by President Barack Hussein Obama. Do you need any more explanation here? Is the writing not clear? Green also listed individuals who could be invited to speak in support, including John Edwards, John Sweeney, Cornel West, complete moron West is, Robert Ehrlich, John Girard, Robert Gettelfinger. Gettelfinger? Are you serious? David Bonnier, and openly socialist Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Okay. This is the man that was promoted to this post or assigned to this post by Barack Obama. Wow. What more do we need here? What more evidence do we need to tell us that Obama means America no good? So, we're fast approaching running out of czars. So we're going to go ahead and shift focus for a minute to reading between the Constitution's lines. It's about the Constitution and the reading of the Constitution earlier today by senators, congressmen on the House floor, which I found to be very moving. I thought, in my opinion, that was an historic moment. And I was deeply moved by it. So I got out my copy of the Constitution, and in some cases I read along when I had the time. But as the founder said, let there be a Constitution. And the founders looked at the articles and clauses and saw that it was good. For more than 200 years, Americans have revered the Constitution as the law of the land. But the GOP and the Tea Party, heralding the document in recent months, and the recitation on the House floor, have caused some Democrats to worry that the Charter is being misconstrued as the immutable Word of God. Example, they are reading it like it's a sacred text, said Representative Gerald Nadler, Democrat, New York, the outgoing chairman of the House Judiciary Committee on the Constitution, Civil Rights, and Civil Liberties, who has studied and memorized the Constitution with intensity. Nadler called the ritualistic reading on the floor total nonsense and propaganda. Really, since when has the Constitution become total nonsense? Oh, Scarlett wants to know, why is Cornel West a complete idiot? Well, I say that West is an idiot because, in my opinion, his views, his socialist radical views, are far and away over the top from any of the czars that I have encountered. Now, bear in mind that I am, and you know what, I'm almost embarrassed to say it. I am friends with West, sort of. He and I have had many conversations over the years, both email and mostly email and telephonic. We've only seen each other and spoken in person maybe, I guess, 9 or 10 times. And I suppose when I call him a complete idiot, it's meant to be more affectionate than anything else.
And so that's why I'm calling him a complete idiot. It's more of a friendly, affectionate term. I have the same sort of banter going on between me and Gates as well, who is also a noted historian and the principal figure in that gaffe the president made when he called the Cambridge police when he said that they behaved stupidly. Anyway, I'm kind of friends with both of those guys. I won't say we're good buddies, but we all know each other because we pretty much do a lot of the same work. But anyway, that's why I wanted to go ahead and mention that. So, back to Nadler. Nadler calls the ritualistic reading on the floor total nonsense and propaganda, intended to claim the document for Republicans. You read the Torah, you read the Bible, you build a worship service around it, said Nadler, who argued that the founders were not demagogues and that the document's need for amendments to abolish slavery and other injustices showed it was highly imperfect. Indeed, it was highly, highly imperfect document, but not a lot of people really know that. Slavery would have been abolished back in the Continental Congress as far back as before the document was created. However, the rules for the founders were that were they to challenge England and break from England, that everything that they did had to be unanimous. And so within the Constitution was a provision to abolish slavery. Every member of the founding fathers voted to abolish slavery, except one, the fine gentleman from North Carolina, whose name at this moment I am so embarrassed escapes me. But he was the representative from North Carolina, and he held out. And so Benjamin Franklin suggested that we fight our battles when and where we can, and at some future date, the issue of slavery would be addressed. Not a lot of people know that. All right, moving on. We know that the document was imperfect and that amendments were put forth to address the imperfection of the document. But Nadler goes on to suggest that you're not supposed to worship your Constitution. You're supposed to govern your government by it, he said. I agree. Of course. Reading the Constitution doesn't constitute worshiping it. I read stuff all the time. I read song lyrics today to the song Imagine by the Beatles. I wonder if Nadler would consider, and I read it aloud for a classroom. It was a dramatic reading. There was a little music in the background. It was really cool. But anyway, would Nadler have suggested that I was worshiping the Beatles? Because they wrote the lyrics. This is a big stretch right here. But exalting the Constitution is hardly new. Constitutional scholars and historians say the document has occupied a nearly spiritual sphere for Americans, practically since its ratification. It has an immediate and obvious parallel to how one interprets the Bible, wouldn't you think? The Constitution is seen as both the source and the product of God's blessing on the United States. At least that's the way I see it. Reading and invoking the Constitution is part of a public ritual that makes up the civil religion, if you will. For example, in his first presidential inaugural address, George Washington divided, I'm choking up with emotion. No, not really, I'm not. Just got distracted for a moment. In his first presidential inaugural address, George Washington divined the invisible hand of providence in the nation's creation. A pervasive belief that the Constitution was a quasi-scriptural document and had a and possessed a quasi-scriptural quality. The perceived majesty of the document has waxed and waned over time. I'm sure we can all agree, or perhaps not. But after a sweeping Republican Party victory in November, in the midterms, it is conservative and Tea Party members who are most vocal in extolling the document's restorative powers. Representative Michelle Bachmann, and isn't she pretty? My goodness. I can't stop looking at her. I look at her all day. A frequent exalter of the Constitution said Thursday's reading is a logical reaction to a campaign that was explicitly run on its principles. She said that she believes the Constitution is a guide for paring down an expansive government powers. The words of the Constitution mean that they what they say they mean, she said. She describes the Constitution as the organic, original document that gives life to a nation. And isn't that true? And I wonder sometimes why Democrats and liberals refer to the Constitution when it suits them. Now, mind you, it's not on the same level as a sacred text that God would hand down to the faithful. The document was secular and intended to provide parameters for the branches of government. But, of course, religious inspiration had a role in the document's drafting, wouldn't you agree? Those who wrote the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution were themselves devout individuals, primarily in their Christian faith. They're reflective of their sincerely held beliefs. And one wonders if this nation could have survived without this sacred document. No, of course not. Certainly not. The document and the founders, they were steeped in Enlightenment classical culture. They wanted a reestablishment of republicanism, through acts of reason. Different interpretations of the intentions of the founders and the meaning of the text are virtually as old as the Constitution itself. Now, the document's genius, according to many scholars, is its often purposeful ambiguity. Think about that for a minute. The founders were ingenious in what they established. It's an ingenious establishment of a common vocabulary for disagreement consisted embedded in the document itself. But, you know, some Democrats and constitutional scholars said the Tea Party had an amoral view of the document that ignores the monumental changes of the Civil War, the New Deal, and the Civil Rights era. The events of the Constitutional Convention showed that the Constitution resulted from a pro-tax rebellion on the part of Federalists who thought the Articles of Confederation lacked enough power to raise taxes to pay the nation's considerable war debts. Did a lot of you know that? Did anybody know that? Now, as it relates to the Tea Party people, Nadler wonders how many of them have read the Constitution. A lot of them, he says, seem to think the Constitution is the Articles of Confederation. I don't know where he would get that idea from. I have read the Constitution. I keep a copy in my pocket. I actually do. I keep a copy in my pocket, in my case, and there's a copy, an electronic copy on my computers. And I have a copy right here on my desk. Nadler said that he anticipates a raft of idiotic amendments from Republicans, such as an effort to allow states to nullify acts of Congress. He says that would blatantly violate the Constitution. Well, we'll see. I just think that we're moving in the right direction as it relates to this new Congress. And it gives me hope that at some point all will be well. Now, tomorrow, we're going to take a look at President Barack Obama's czars and their role in America. And that should wrap up our discussion of czars for the week. And what I'd like to do when we talk about these czars is inform you of who they are and what they stand for, and remind you that Barack Obama told us, he told us all on the campaign trail, that we would know how he would govern by the people he surrounds himself with. Those were his actual words. And I have counted off 39 czars. Okay. Scarlett says she's not all that gorgeous that one could just look at all day. Scarlett does not agree. Okay. Well, I don't know, Scarlett. I guess you could be right, because there have been a couple of days where she's had some bad hair days. She wasn't looking all her best. But for the most part, yeah, I think I could. She's easy on the eyes, I'll tell you that. Maybe I exaggerated just a little. Michelle Bachmann is very easy on the eyes. So, tomorrow we're going to talk about, well, with the news of Van Jones' controversial past, President Obama's czars are getting a closer look from the media, Republicans, and the average Americans. Now, we're also going to get into what a czar is, because on Monday I went over the term czar and the history of that term being used by presidents here in the United States, but I also spoke about where the term originated from, and it originates from Caesar and so on. I can go over all that again, and I will briefly tomorrow night where the actual term came from. But here in America, a czar is an unofficial term used to describe an individual who is a special advisor to the president on a given issue. Many presidents have had at least one czar, such as the drug czar for President Reagan. President Reagan had only one czar, and that was Bill Bennett. Just one. What is causing controversy within the Obama White House is that the president has an estimated, nearly 40 czars, with the possibility of more to come. Now, to be completely clear, a czar is not the subject of a Senate confirmation hearing and answers to no one except President Obama. So think about this. You have all of these czars, 38 so far, with all of these radical socialist, communist, Marxist views that, mind you, are not the stuff of my opinion, but actual fact. Facts, verbiage, quotes that come from the mouths of each and every individual so as to leave no ambiguity as to what their mindset is and their backgrounds. They answer to no one but the President of the United States. They are handpicked by the President of the United States. Every single czar has either had communist, socialist, or Marxist, or all three histories and backgrounds. Now, do we really need to get into the idea that, hey, well, what's the big deal? So what? They're socialist. It's kind of like this. I live in a 4-bedroom house, and there's only me in this house. And pretty much, I live in maybe one or two rooms in the house. Don't frequently visit any of the other rooms. But it's my house. I pay for this house. I pay the mortgage every month. I pay all the bills, all the utility bills, all the maintenance, all the upkeep. It's my house. Under Marxism, socialism, or communism, I should not have this house. Never mind that my money paid for it, that my hard work, going to school, getting good grades, all that stuff, enabled me to decide to buy a house that well, to some might be a little bit too much for just one person. Never mind that. Let's put that aside. It's my house. But under the Obama administration's policies, I would have to give this house up. Because, hey, there's somebody else who could use this house. Maybe a family of four or five or six. Maybe that nice black family down the road who is living in a two-bedroom apartment because, well, they bought a house they couldn't afford for $300,000-$400,000, and they were only making like $30,000. They couldn't afford the house. So they were booted out, the house was foreclosed on, and they had to move into an apartment. They've got like six kids. So under the Obama's plan of socialism, Marxism, or even communism, I would be moved out of my nice fine house and into something smaller, more befitting one person. And those lovely folks who overextended themselves would be moved into my house. And most likely I would have to continue to pay for it while they're living in it. That's what's wrong with socialism, Marxism, and communism here in the United States. As I stated in previous radio shows, Americans are hardwired for freedom, not to be guided and directed, not to be told what to do and how to do it, not to be told how to live our lives. Damn it, if I want to pour a box of salt in my food, then that's my prerogative. If I want to use a stick of butter in a bowl of oatmeal, then damn it, that's what I'm going to do. If I want to eat until I get 700 pounds, that's my business. Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, who seems to be getting fatter every single day, shouldn't be telling me how to eat, how to live, what sort of car to drive. It's unheard of. This is not how Americans are wired. Barack Obama's going to find that out. And I believe he's going to find it out the hard way. Yeah, I think so. Because right now, he believes that he can pull one over on the American people. And as I've stated in previous shows, he's working it slowly, isn't he? Very slowly. And I liken what Obama is doing with the number of czars he has and a lot of his policies as the frog in the pot of water. Yes, I'll tell it once more. Put the frog in a nice pot of cold water. He'll just swim around for a little while, thinking everything's cool. And gradually turn the heat up just a little. And then just a little more. Next thing you know, the frog's all belly up. You know, he's boiled. He's checked out. He's gone. As opposed to putting the frog in a that pot of hot water and jumps out. He's all scalded, but, you know, he jumps out and he's cool, he's good, or he dies a really fast, painful death. This is what Barack Obama is doing to the United States of America. He's put us in that pot of cold water. And slowly, ever so slowly, he's turning up the heat. With czar after czar after czar. What are we going to do about this? Well, we have elected a new Congress. a new Republican majority, and they have promised to deal with these issues. Well, the problem with that, Scarlett, is that I'm a smooth dude from the south side of Chicago as well. Guess what? Here's the issue. Folks want to know why you're always on Obama's butt. Well, because just like Obama, I'm a smooth dude from the south side of Chicago. And just like every other smooth dude, or con man, or criminal, we can spot each other a mile away. We really can. The church that President Obama attended, I attended as well. Although, I must admit, I will admit, in full disclosure, that I attended that church back in high school. In 1977, I was dating a young lady who attended that church, and of course I went to church with her just because I was dating her. And the same pastor, Reverend Wright, was there, much younger, of course. But had I attended the same church as Barack Obama when we were older, and he said, "Not God bless America, God damn America," I tell you what, I would have got up and got in that ass. I would have asked my date or my girlfriend or my wife, whoever it was at the time, post my bail, head on downtown, because I'm about to do this. We're gonna do this right now. I'm gonna have to whoop this guy's ass. Obama did no such thing, though. Well, until tomorrow, thank you so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. And tomorrow we'll finish up the czars and we'll talk about a few more current events. Once again, thank you so much. Thanks for listening, Scarlett. Thanks for listening, guest 4716. I will chat with you all tomorrow. Y'all have a wonderful night. And I'm not really sure what I'm going to leave with. Let's leave with a little Top Gun music here. Oh, yeah. All right. Good night.